This episode is sponsored by Awin. Two-thirds of digital ad spend currently flows to the three big tech platforms, Google, Meta, and Amazon. But their auction-based ad models favor their own bottom line and inflate costs at a time when every single marketing dollar counts. Awin's affiliate partnerships platform offers a real alternative to big tech and puts you back in control of your ad spend. Want to find out how? Visit awin.com/emarketer to learn more.
A lot of people did not cancel subscriptions to streaming services during the pandemic, even though it was a really tough financial time. Just shows that people are going to pay more for it and not really think too much of it, because even in like really tough times, we've seen that people are not willing to sacrifice on entertainment.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, August 1st. Danny and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Awin. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by one of our analysts who writes our marketing and advertising briefing based out of New York. It's Daniel Konstantinovich.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's really hot today.
Every day from now on, forever.
Forever.
So today's facts. How far does the average person walk during their lifetime? Any guesses, Danny?
Oh my gosh, no. I had a conversation with someone recently about running shoes.
About this?
Well, it was adjacent, where like apparently you're supposed to get new running shoes every 250 miles. And I was like, I mean, that sounds like a lot, but that's not that much, right?
That's
like
not the most. No.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would say I'm going to shoot high. I'm going to go like 300,000
steps, that feels maybe miles. Too high.
Miles? Was that the question? Miles?
Oh, yeah, miles. That's it's not terrible. It's not close, but it's not terrible. So okay. A post from Alliance Work Partners notes that the average moderately active person takes around 7,500 steps a day. And if you maintain that daily average and live until 80 years of age, then you'll have walked over 200 million steps in your lifetime. Flip that into miles, and you're looking at about 110,000 miles.
Oh, all right.
Put another way,
I overshot.
Yes, I would have had no idea what to say. But put another way, that would be like walking across America once, let's say right to left, 37 times.
Or man, wow.
Walking around the Earth more than four times in your life. Around the Earth more than four times. Well, I won't
either. I was going to ask how many trips back and forth from the fridge to my bed is that? It's got to be a lot. It's got to be like a million.
At least. Today's real topic, though, Netflix's surprise tailwind. So in today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover Netflix. Then for another news, I'll talk to Danny about why Disney might be bailing on TV. We start, of course, with the lead. We're talking about how Netflix has been doing performance-wise lately. We'll talk a bit about them axing their basic ad-free plan, and then what their plans are for sports going forwards. We start with how they've done recently in terms of subscribers. Well, Netflix now has 238 million paid subscribers. That's up 6 million in Q2. That's three times as many people that they added in Q1. Subscribers in the US and Canada. That was worldwide. Subscribers in the US and Canada, which account for about 32%, so about a third of Netflix's total subscribers coming from that region, added more than a million. That region is approaching 76 million total. But Danny, what's your takeaway after the streaming giant added 6 million new users worldwide and over a million in the US and Canada?
Yeah, I think the really strong user growth figures, I mean, this is one of Netflix's highest quarter for new subscriptions in a while, just shows that their password sharing change was a really big success. I think there was a lot of fear around it or anxiety around it because consumers were not going to be happy about it. There was a lot of discourse of, you know, Netflix turning its back on things it has long encouraged. Like it used to kind of advertise that, like, we don't care if you share an account, like you can go ahead and do it. And then they turned on that, and they didn't just make it so that people who are like using someone else's account have to pay for their own. But they also made it so that if you have an account and you want to keep someone on there in a different household watching on your account, you can only do that for one person. So if you have like two kids who don't live at home and they're both on your Netflix account,
pick your favorite.
Pick your favorite child.
Easy.
But yeah, I mean, It was a huge success. I think I was kind of surprised with how quickly it created a turnaround for Netflix. I thought it was going to be a much slower burn, but it seems like people were really quick to not want to lose access to it.
It speaks to the staying power of it, doesn't it? And some numbers to support that. So Antenna reporting immediately after the crackdown, password sharing crackdown, Netflix had the four largest days of US user acquisition since it began tracking subscriber numbers, 3.5 million signups in June alone. Morgan Stanley analyst Ben Swinburne thinks Netflix is on track to reach nearly 25 million net new subscribers from the paid sharing program in 2023. And then Third Bridge analyst Jamie Lumley thinks about 50% of the reported 100 million households, that was the headline figure that kept going around, 100 million households were not paying for Netflix, were sharing passwords. This analyst, Jamie Lumley, thinks about 50%, about half of those 100 million households sharing passwords could end up creating their own Netflix account, according to an article from our senior director of briefings, Jeremy Goldman. I mean, Danny, do you think that's the case? Do you think this tailwind continues into Q3, Q4 and beyond?
Yeah, I think it will continue for at least a little while. I don't know if they're going to see 100 million new users because of this, but I think it's safe to say that, you know, at least next quarter, we'll probably also have some pretty strong user growth. But it looks like that's not enough to really carry the company. Like, they, despite the really strong growth and success of password sharing and other things that we'll talk about, the market response to the earnings was pretty bad. Netflix like missed some revenue targets and the stock went down pretty significantly. So even though it seems like it was a strong quarter, I think that reflects that there's some anxiety about long-term growth.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about their revenue, because as you mentioned, subscriber numbers look pretty good, which isn't normal. At least it hasn't been normal for a long time. Q2 isn't normally a bountiful quarter for Netflix subscriber-wise. The company hasn't seen this kind of worldwide growth in a Q2 since a flood of signups back in Q2 2020, when the pandemic kept everyone inside. And in North America, adding over a million subscribers is not normal either, at least as of late. In the US, Netflix has only added over a million users one time in the last 12 quarters. Last Q2, in fact, it was busy losing a million subscribers. So quite the turnaround. And then on top of that, Danny, I mean, maybe this is some of the reason for less optimism on the revenue side, is because when you zoom out, Netflix isn't really growing, specifically in the US and Canada, because it's been stuck around 74 to 75 million users since the end of 2020. And even though they added a million this quarter, it's been up and down and up and down. And ultimately, it's really kind of stuck at that 74, 75 million users figure in North America. Netflix total revenue grew 3%. Money from US and Canada was up 2%. What should we make of their low single-digit revenue growth?
Yeah, I mean, I think something Netflix is really struggling with is growth in its biggest markets, which makes sense, right? When you have so many subscribers in North America and it's the main subscription base, it's going to be hard eventually to keep growing that, which is why the company is making a lot of investments in Asia and places like South Korea to try and build out new subscriber bases there. But I think, I mean, it makes sense that Netflix would struggle with revenues like this, because the only ways that they get revenue until like a quarter or two ago was through subscriptions. Right. And I mean, they have like this merchandise business, but I don't think that's adding meaningfully to the spreadsheet. The ad-supported tier is another like big boost to that, but it's still really new. And even though there appears to have been strong signups for it, Netflix itself hasn't said how many subscribers there are to the ad-supported tier. But, you know, you'd have to imagine that now with the password sharing change, a lot of those people who were booted off sharing probably signed up for the ad-supported tier because it's the cheapest one, right?
It's closest in terms of price. Yeah, I mean, we haven't got any official numbers, but a lot of the estimates saying that it's still a tiny share of Netflix's total. And we think Netflix will make about $200 million from ads this year, over $700 million next year. And so to your point, maybe that is some of the reservation that the markets have, is that, look, you've got advertising now, but that's not really going to see any real gains, any real reap any rewards for, you know, at least a couple of years.
They have invested a lot of money into video games and acquiring video game studios and building two of their own video game studios. And, you know, it's still basically widely inaccessible to the majority of Netflix subscribers. You can only play these games on your phone. They're not yet on TVs or on the Netflix app. and there is no bundled service. There's no like pay an extra $1 a month or $2 a month on your Netflix subscription and get access to this game's library. It just kind of like is sitting there without anything happening.
Bit of a sunk cost at this point, they've not been able to get any kind of return on investment as of yet. But yeah, that's a really good point. Something that is easy to forget that they made those investments in games so recently. Yeah, revenue wise, so worldwide revenue growth has been stuck, kind of. It's been 4% or below for each of the last three quarters. So that's been stuck for a little while now, going on nearly a year. US and Canada growth struggling. 6% growth was the low point for Netflix back in Q1 2022. This quarter's 2% makes that 6% look pretty amazing. So yeah, particularly concerning in the US and Canada, just 2%, and supposed to be one of its more lucrative markets. Daniel, we've mentioned the ad supported tier, which was a lower cost option for folks. Netflix, some of the recent news as well is that Netflix just removed its cheapest ad free tier called Basic, which was $10 a month. So now that's gone. The offerings are Netflix Standard with ads is $7, Standard without ads is $15, and then Premium is $20. What are your thoughts on Netflix axing their Basic ad-free plan for $10 a month?
So I have two thoughts about this. Like, my analyst brain says that this is a smart thing for them to do. Of course that they would do this, right? Why would I have this like middle of the road tier that a ton of Netflix subscribers are on when I can get rid of that and divert them to a tier where they're either spending like $2 more a month and that bumps up revenues really significantly, or I could divert them to the ad supported tier where maybe they're paying less, but you know, there's a longer runway and will sustain itself, right? Like you'll get more viewers, more advertisers will come in, revenues will go up, and like the cycle will.
And they've said that those users have been more lucrative, the ad-supported ones.
Yeah, for sure. So from like a financial point, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's a smart move for the company. From a consumer point, it kind of sucks to have lost access to the cheapest tier of Netflix without ads shortly after, you know, a lot of consumers had to like probably boot their kids off of the Netflix subscription or their friends off the Netflix subscription. It is never fun to lose a cheaper option. But, you know, I think the fact that so many people signed up after the password sharing changes, the fact that a lot of people did not cancel subscriptions to streaming services during the pandemic, even though it was a really tough financial time, just shows that like people are going to pay more for it and not really think too much of it. Because even in like really tough times, I think we've seen that people are not willing to sacrifice on entertainment like that.
Yeah, clever to have done this by saying, well, look, you know, if you want a cheaper option, we do have one. It's with ads. People are used to watching things with ads. But if you don't want them, then pay a bit more and you can keep the same experience. And it kind of speaks to the staying power, I think, of Netflix. I've always thought that they could raise their prices to $40 a month and see very little churn, to be perfectly honest. It is a service that people almost need to have. It's kind of become a staple once you cut the cord. That's the thing people get first and then go from there. And you can really tell that in terms of some really meaningful metrics like time spent. And there was a recent Next TV article from Dave Frankel noting that Netflix was still watched more than twice as much versus any other SVOD in the US during Q2. Only YouTube, excluding YouTube TV, beat Netflix in US streaming minutes during Q2, and that was only slightly. The Disney bundle, Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN Plus, if you added all of those up, they're the next closest to Netflix in terms of usage, but there's just 70% of the minutes that Netflix gets. Amazon in third, if you get rid of YouTube, Amazon was just 40% of Netflix in terms of minutes streamed. So I think Netflix knows that it can do this and people aren't going to love it, but there are alternatives, cheaper alternatives for them to move to. So I don't think they're going to jump ship as much as they would if they didn't have those alternatives to downgrade to. Let's close the lead out by talking about what Netflix plans to do with sports. So Netflix recently said that they will stick to sports adjacent programming. Think documentaries and TV shows like Drive to Survive, the series on Formula One racing, and Quarterback, Netflix said it thinks it can have a really strong offering for sports fans on Netflix without having to be part of the difficulty of the economic model of live sports licensing. Danny, is sticking to sports adjacent programming the right move for Netflix?
It's sort of complicated to say. I think right now, if I were Netflix, I would not be looking to spend like several billion dollars on acquiring sports rights. Also, there are very few options left for things to acquire just because everything's been snapped up. Even like pickleball rights are, I think Peacock
Thank
got
goodness.
Those or someone got those. Yeah.
Finally. You
know, finally, it's about time. So there's, first of all, not a lot of options for them to spend on.
Yeah.
Ever since that quarter last year where they lost subscribers for the first time, they have had this really intense magnifying glass on them about spending. Even the streamers that have spent a ton of money on sports rights, like YouTube on Sunday Ticket or Amazon on Thursday Night Football, are under a lot of pressure to really quickly show that they can turn this into a revenue stream. Mm-hmm. Netflix is struggling to turn what it already has into like a meaningful revenue stream. So I think it would just be maybe too many things to juggle, but also on like a technical level, they have really struggled with live streaming. Like their first attempts to do live streaming events have been basically a disaster. And I'm sure that, you know, a sports league is not really thrilled about the idea of selling to someone who can't figure out live streaming.
That's true. Yeah. Would they sell to them in the first place, let alone would they want to buy from them?
Yeah. So yeah. I think right now they kind of have to do this, whether it's the right move or not. I don't think they have much of a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Their sports adjacent programming is really popular. It's kind of funny. You mentioned Drive to Survive, how this is like such a popular thing on Netflix and drove up the value of Formula One rights and advertising so significantly. And then Netflix like couldn't even reap the benefit of that. You know, they just had to watch as like
vicious irony.
Yeah. They just had to watch wistfully like through the window and be like, oh, my child or whatever.
We'll see you in 10 years when it's time when those rights are up for renewal. Yeah. To your point, they've tried some live stuff. One went well, one really did not go well. And, but it doesn't seem like they're completely out on live sports. Their first foray into live sports, this is not just live things, live sports. It will be a celebrity golf tournament in November. So, I mean, Danny, they said they were out on advertising. They said we'll never do it. They did it eventually when the market made them. And so you could see them keeping an eye on sports. And if the right type of sports comes about, the right package for them, then maybe they go for it. That's all we've got time for the lead. Time, of course, for the halftime report. So, Danny, what do you think is the one thing that's most worth repeating from the first half?
I think Netflix just like is really struggling to diversify its revenues. They have a lot of projects in the works that will have a really long lead time. And I think they're hurting because of that. They are squeezing that little bit of extra juice out of the North American market, but it's not enough to really satisfy investors or really hit the targets that it seems like Netflix wants to hit. So the question now that they've kind of gotten some of their footing back is what's next? And I'm sure Netflix is asking itself that, but also the idea of what's next is something that Netflix has kind of struggled with and struggled to execute on a lot in the past.
Well, that's it for the lead. Time for the second half. Today in other news, just one story, why Disney might be bailing on TV. Story one of one. Daniel, you recently wrote that Disney CEO Bob Iger suggested the company might be considering selling off its linear TV assets, think ABC, which he said may not be core to the entertainment giant. This statement excludes owned property ESPN, which they said they are seeking strategic partners for. But Danny, the most important sentence in your article about Disney maybe bailing on linear TV is what and why?
I think it's that both viewers and advertisers will follow if Disney cuts the cord. I think it makes a lot of sense, right? Like everybody knows that TV is on the way out, even if it's a very long decline, and that streaming or digital video is replacing it. That's why NBC, you know, Paramount, Max, all these companies are really investing so heavily in streaming because it really is a get there now or get left behind down the road sort of gambit. So if you're Disney, which still makes billions of dollars on linear TV, and linear TV, even though it's on a decline, will actually increase in spending, in ad spending next year because of things like the US election. But if you're Disney and you see that really long decline, you know, is it maybe a smart decision to divest entirely from TV now so that you don't have this depreciating asset at the same time that you're trying to build out a really expensive streaming business? And I mean, maybe the answer is yes. That seems to be what Disney is hinting at, or at least they're starting to toy with the idea. It's interesting that they've been talking so publicly about this idea and about plans with ESPN. That makes it seem like it's a little bit more of a real thing than just some kind of frivolous statement. It clearly got a lot of attention. And I think the success of Disney Plus on a pretty quick turnaround shows that viewers will follow and advertisers will follow. There was a lot of advertiser demand for a ad-supported tier in Disney Plus.
I understand where they're coming from. It did seem like maybe it was a bit too soon to be at least putting this out there publicly, because you made the points in your piece, which you just mentioned just now, advertisers spending $61 billion on US linear TV this year. You said major events are going to give it a bump briefly next year to $62 billion. And if you fast forward 4 years into the future, we have our forecasts that say $57 billion will still be spent on linear TV by 2027. And so it seems like a lot of money to leave on the table, even if you are nervous that those assets are going to depreciate. So I guess it's finding the right time to jump ship. And I'm not sure when that is, but that seems like maybe it's a bit early with so much money, especially considering CTV hasn't got to that level and exceeded it yet, and still there's so many dollars still to be made. That's what we've got time for this episode. Danny, thank you so much for hanging out today, mate.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, Sophie, who helps with social media stuff. Thank you to her. Thanks to everyone listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily, a new marketing podcast made possible by Awin. You can tune in tomorrow to hang out with the Reimagining Retail crew. Sarah Lebo will be speaking to principal analyst Jasmine Emberg and senior analyst Sky Canavis all about TikTok and shopping.